Hour 2 Overdrive continues, brought to you by FanDuel, bringing you everything from the opening line to the final score. We are at Oakdale, the RBC Canadian Open. Seeing a lot of pros still walking around. Old Billy Haas is out there. We said hi to Bill Haas. He's a big fan of yours.
I love Billy Haas. He's right behind us. He's about to, and you think, I said to you, he was on the green below us, and I said, there's my guy, Billy Haas, and you think he heard that?
Yes, I know he did, because he immediately looked up and gave us a wave, and basically, I think he gave us kind of a half wave,
old,
half bird, kind of leave me alone, I'm out
Doyle.
Here.
Yeah.
There was a part of it, because he's working, right? He was just on the 14th green, or he's on the 13th green, and now he's going off on 14.
We love you, Billy.
Yeah, we love Bill Haas. I might pick him, actually, tomorrow. He looks good out here. He's feeling it.
He's dialed in.
He is dialed in. So, yeah, listen, it's an interesting day to be at a golf course at a PGA Tour stop when the whole golf world is kind of exploding with this.
I can't believe all of them weren't, like, telling their caddies, screw the practice round, we want to hear this.
I know.
That's somewhat surprising to me.
Like, I have a lot of respect for the guys. Like, I don't care about Jay Monahan. I got a tournament I want to try to win.
Yeah.
Like, forget live golf. Forget what Phil Mickelson's doing.
Line. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this tournament's, the pegs are going in the ground on Thursday. There's a lot of money at stake, right? A lot of FedEx points, the whole nine. So, yeah, it'll be a fun week. It's going to be a different week. There is a little element of deja vu because last year Liv was hanging over that, yet it was a phenomenal tournament. McIlroy ends up winning it. McIlroy is back this year, and we'll see. All right, so more on that later this hour. Confirm or deny in about 25 minutes. Steve Phillips coming up here in a moment. Cup final off for a couple of days, and that Vegas team, I got to give him credit.
Well, Bill Foley was.
Bill Foley is right in his
I'll
element, and he deserves to be.
They're a serious team. Like, they are.
They come at you wave after wave after wave. And I understand what Florida's trying to do. They're trying to drag them in to a fight.
Yeah.
And they're trying to agitate because they did that against Carolina. They did it against the Leafs, Boston, and they've done it very effectively.
It's not working.
Edmonton tried to do that against Vegas, and Vegas didn't flinch.
It's not working.
Vegas will not flinch.
Yeah.
They don't have to flinch. They're up 2-0 in the series.
Isn't it? I find it amazing watching Vegas play, though, how it's just like, it's back when L.A. won the two cups. It's big. It's fast. It's mean. It's finish your checks. And speaking of finishing your checks, the one thing at 40 years old that you've become is a friend stealer. And the one friend that you stole from me, he's on the line, and he wants to say happy birthday to
you.
Wow. Let's bring him in here. You can bring in your best friend.
No, you go ahead.
Darcy Tucker, can you wish your best buddy here, the friend stealer, a happy 40th birthday?
Well, I don't know how good a friend. He hasn't shown up and played golf with me in about 3.5 weeks. He's been too busy playing with his other buddies, so he's stealing everybody's friends.
That is true. That is valid. I am working
the room. Let me hear how this goes down. You introduced him to some guys in a random round, and then he said, these guys are really cool, and now they're my friends.
That's exactly what happened. He moved on from both of us, and now he stole all my friends. I can't even get in a tea time with my friends now, because he's in the tea times with them.
I do think I replaced your name, actually, recently. I think D. Tucker was taken out and B. Hayes was put in there. Now that I think about it, that could be factual, Tux. You could be right. You could be right about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have one other bone to pick while wishing him a happy birthday. Can somebody go back and find the exact words that were said by me about what he was going to shoot at the National and what position he was going to shoot it from? Because I said the tips, and all of a sudden you two idiots are playing from the old man 70-plus tees there.
That is true. We were playing, what, about 6,500 yards?
And you saw some of the tees. You would have been in big trouble.
You know I wasn't shooting 185. The tips or the front tees, 185 is outrageous at any golf course.
Well, definitely on, I think it's 14 at the National, you would not clear the gorge.
That's right. So you got to keep reloading pellets.
That's right. So I can confirm this 100% that you would be off that tee until you hit a pitching wedge to the lower tees and hit a 5-iron to the fairway.
Yes.
If you played it like that, you'd have been fine. But if you played it with your driver, it's not up in the air enough to get over that gorge.
Yeah. And you've been seeing me hit the driver. Even if it was 3 weeks ago, I could tell you it's not any better today, buddy. The driver has not been treating me well.
Tux, what do you think about what's going on in the Stanley Cup Finals? As I was just saying, how it's refreshing that it's just – it's such simple hockey. There's all these different fancy ways of equating what's going on. And they finish their checks, they're skilled, they're big, and they're getting some saves. And it doesn't seem very complicated, does it?
Well, it's a big, strong defense playing against a feisty group of forwards. And right now, that big, strong defense is taking over. And that's basically what you can equate it to. Yeah, the goaltending hasn't been what it was for Florida. But at the same time, I look at that Golden Knights defense, and I'm just like, that's how you win in the playoffs, man. You just, they're big, they could skate, they're in your face, and they don't allow anything to get through to their net, which is where Florida's had their heyday when they do win, is they're allowed to get into those areas of the ice that most other teams won't go to because their feisty forwards want to do it. And right now, that big, strong defense is not letting them get to that area. And then, you know, obviously Bob's not giving them the goaltending that he had in the other series.
Mm-hmm. You're probably the perfect guy to ask this question about a topic we were getting into last hour with Tkachuk getting, you know, 2 out of 10 multiple times last night. Right. I personally thought that was awful officiating, considering it's the Cup Final. Yes, he's getting crazy. Yes, he's doing some silly stuff. But they're about to go down 2-0. He's trying to send messages. He wants to make some sort of a statement. I'm sure you've been in that spot where the ref just gave you a 2 out of 10, and at that point, are you saying, "Hey, wait a minute! Like, if it was a close game, you wouldn't throw me out. Why can't I send a message? Like, can you look back on that a little bit and kind of resonate with Tkachuk getting 2 and 10s and think why? Like, I'm just sure I'm getting a little bit silly out here, but why not? It's a Cup Final.
Well, he got the last 10 for hitting somebody too hard. That's all
right.
He got the 10 for there, because he didn't do anything. He basically got hit the guy, and then he got tied up and roughed up, and nothing really happened. There's no reason he should have got a 10 there, but he got the 10 because they just wanted to make sure, oh, we can't hit that hard now. We got to be very,
right,
very careful on what we do. That's why he got that 10. Listen, he's trying to do what he thinks is best, and it's worked all playoffs. And right up to this point, nothing was really going on 10-wise for him before that, so I don't know why all of a sudden in the Stanley Cup Finals. Maybe because somebody else is sitting in the stands and wants to make sure he's sending a message to everybody too. So that might be the whole reason for it. But at the end of the day, you know, this hockey is what hockey has always been about. And it's about who's going to, you know, play the hardest, who's going to be the most disciplined. And they weren't disciplined last night. You know, 94 takes a bad penalty. Mm-hmm. They score in the power play, gives them an opportunity to get the lead. And they never really looked back after that. So you got to be disciplined while trying to get away with some of the stuff that Tkachuk and the boys have gotten away with in the earlier series.
Talking about friends, did you get invited out to Kamloops for the Kamloops hug in the memorial? I saw Strutty and Holly and Iggy and Nasher and all those fools out there. Were you out there as well?
Well, you know this, Noodles. I'm an outlier when it comes to the Blazer Love Fest. It's like being an Oiler. Maybe some of the Oilers didn't get invited. I got invited, yes, but I was like, boys, I got a wedding I got to attend, so I'm not going to be hugging too many people out there. But it was nice to see it back at Kamloops. It's a great, great hockey town, great junior hockey town, a place that I have very fond memories of, and played with some amazing hockey players and was able to win some championships there. So you obviously don't forget that. But, you know, like Hazy says, I got some other things that I got to take care of here in Toronto too, like the Coppinwood Fest golf course edition of We Are Friends. So we've got a little tourney going on out there, so I
That's
had to
right.
get some things done here with the golf at Coppinwood, because that's just as important as the Memorial Cup Fest.
Absolutely. 2-0 in my group, just want to throw that out. Won this morning. I think you're 2-0 too, so I'm coming for you, buddy. At some point it's going to happen. There'll be a clash.
Well, I've got my third match tomorrow, so if I played anything like I did today, I might be out of the tournament, because the boys absolutely kicked my rear end this morning. So I got to wake up here. You know me, Hazy. If I take a couple days off golf, it's like mm-hmm. it's like the Panthers taking 10 days off before the Stanley Cup Finals.
It's rusty. It's rusty, but you'll be all right. You'll be all right. It's all good. Well, thanks for calling in, pal. We appreciate it. And Let's get out soon. Hey, we got to get out soon. We'll get the old dog out there, too.
Okay. Thanks.
See you, buddy.
Let's get soon, bud. You just let me know when something frees up your schedule after you.
Yeah.
You're playing with your friends over at Oakdale now, so
right.
Just let me know when you're freed up.
We'll find time for you, buddy. We'll find time. Don't you worry. Thanks, Tux.
Appreciate it.
See you, buddy. There's Darcy Tucker.
That is so greasy. You met some of his friends, and you hang out with his friends when he's not around.
That is tough.
Yeah. Well, we got a good group out there. Rafi Torres. Raf was out there playing this morning.
You took Raf down?
I don't want to get into the details.
No, you don't.
Because I really don't want to get into the details.
No,
it was a very good match, and it could have gone either way. That's all I'm going to say.
But you were victorious.
It felt good. Yeah, it was a good little
You were victorious, but you let him know that Nasher was right. It was the cleanest hit you've ever seen in your life.
I'll tell you what.
Why don't you just show some stones and say Raf like choked on a 3-foot putt on 18 so he can just...
You say it and then keep your head up. I'm not saying anything. No, Raf's a beauty. I mean, he's still a beast. Like, he could still truck people in the National Hockey League.
Oh, yes.
Like, we were talking to Graham Dillette earlier. Saying, like, Graham, if we put a ball on the first tee and gave you a bag of clubs, what would you shoot?
Right.
And what did he say? 70,
he said he'd
72?
Probably shoot 72, 74.
Yeah. Like, you put skates and some equipment on Raf and say, there's a puck in the corner.
Go get it.
Yeah.
He goes
I think
it.
He'll probably win that battle.
And that guy's eating out of a straw for the rest of his life.
And there's a possibility that a message is sent on top. Yes.
Remember how, like, not just that Hossa hit. Like, he hit like a freight train. Because he could skate like the wind.
He's
a big body.
He hit through people, man. That's what it was. Like it's there's a difference between stopping on contact and making a hit and hitting like that Barbachev, he hit through Gudas last night.
Yeah, now I thought there was a bit of head contact, but I wasn't sure. You only had one angle. They didn't replay any type of other angle.
Tell you what,
from that.
Once in a while you want to go at a Russian player with that low center of gravity and you think you're gonna steamroll
him.
He's
a big body.
You will take a beating.
Yes.
He's a big body.
He's a big and he was right. Listen, Gudas is a big boy, and, and you
and
know, he lives by the sword.
He
dies by the
everything.
Sword.
Don't
and
get
he
me
died
wrong.
By it last
yeah.
night.
Yeah, he
don't
did.
Don't get me wrong.
He'd throw the same hit if he could.
He had two early on, two big contacts, and then Barbachev contacted him, and that was to the point you know he was in tough shape. He didn't even go to the scrum. He got up and skated right to the bench down the tunnel. He knew he was in one.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Both him and Eichel got up. They're like, I got to get off
the ice. I'm not even involved in the scrum. I'm going right down the tunnel.
But, I know it sounds goofy and barbaric, but you have to scrum after those kind of hits.
Sure.
Like, you have to. I know it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like Braden Point, Morgan Riley went on the boards.
Yeah.
Every guy on the ice for Tampa Bay took a shot at Riley.
You have to.
Yeah.
And if you're the Leafs or your other teams and you're watching that, you have to. Like, you know,
you don't have to because there's some teams, like the one that we follow, they don't do it.
Well, and
they might.
That's not the only reason they don't go anywhere, but it's a part of the reason. What the percentage is, I don't know. Maybe it's 5%. I don't know. But it's a percentage.
Yeah.
Because you have to. There's a big hit on any player. And there's got to be a reaction on the ice.
Here's the difference, though, too. You gotta practice that. You've got to have that in your DNA all season long. You don't just acquire that at the deadline and then try and morph it into your game. Like, that's the difference is they acquired some of those guys at the deadline, the Acharis, Lafferty's, guys who played a little bit of grit, Shen, same type of thing.
Yep.
But if you had that all year long, then everyone plays for keeps every night, a Tuesday night in November as opposed to – and then it just becomes part of your DNA. You can't just turn it on for the playoffs.
Right.
That's one thing. It'd be interesting to see. I keep saying it. We're seeing NHL moves right now. Philly.
Yeah, trade today, a three-way trade.
But you know, Brad Treliving, Tree's got his work cut out for him. I want to see what he's got and what he's going to do to reshape the roster because 10 UFAs – 10 UFAs he's got to deal with. Obviously, Matthews, Nylander situation.
Oh, yeah. Joe's got a board for us. We can use it later on.
He's got to fill
it up.
He's got to fill it out, and you got to fill it out with a certain type of player that kind of props everybody else up.
I agree with you, and I do think the Matthews number, though, has to be somewhat determined before you can go and acquire pieces with long-term. If you're bringing in someone on 1 year, you know his cap hits 11.6. this year.
Right.
That's not going to change. He's still got another year left on this contract. So you can work under the understanding that whatever you're doing going into next year, is Willie's at $6.9 million, Matthews is at $11.6 million. But beyond that, if you're bringing on someone with term,
right,
or you're talking free agents and you're putting 3-, 4-, 5-year packages in front of them,
right,
you have to know the number. You got to understand what Matthews is talking here.
Right.
And yeah, that's what has to happen. And I think it'll say a lot about both parties what that number is. Not the years, although I would prefer, and I think the Leafs would prefer, and I think it's about time one of these guys finally commits 8 years to this team. Doesn't sound like it's going to be Matthews. Enough is leaked out to make, I think, all of us understand he's not going to do that. But if it's a ludicrous number, I would say shame on both parties. I think it'll say I think there's a legacy play here with Austin Matthews. I do. If he demands a ridiculous number, that says to me money is the priority. And it's not about winning. It's not about who else is going to be along for the ride. I really think it's a big part of his whole reputation here. And we'll find out.
We will find out.
And I'm not saying he should be charitable and give money back or anything stupid like that.
No, but it gets to a certain point.
If it's goofy money, then honestly, he's telling the Leafs and he's telling the fan base, winning is not a priority for me.
I think at the price point he's at, I think if you could say that's a good contract or the word reasonable, like reasonable, I can reason with that.
Sure.
But when you're at that number, a million makes a big difference, the difference between 13 and 14, 14 and 15, whatever that number is going to be.
Especially if it's not going to be an 8-year deal.
Right.
Like if that's the case where he's not going to sign an 8-year deal, then he's not going to do what Cole Caulfield just did,
right,
what Point has done, what Matthew Tkachuk just did, what McKinnon did, what Pastrnak, they all sign 8-year deals.
We're with this organization.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's, I'm not messing around. I'm going to be happy. Sure, in years 5 through 8, I might not make as much as I should,
right,
but I'm good with that because I want to be a Bruin, a Panther, a Lightning player.
Right.
The fact that if it's not 8, that alone, to me, I don't like it. I'll just be blunt about it. He doesn't care about my opinion, but that is my opinion. I don't like the fact that these guys have learned nothing from the last 4 or 5 years. But if it's a 5-year, 15 and a half, that to me is an indictment. And it's on the Leafs for bailing. Because the Leafs need to step up here and say, listen, that's not gonna happen anymore.
Right.
Like they just did it, I believe, to an extent with Dubas. And that's not a cap situation. They could have paid Dubas whatever he asked for. They could have. It would have had no effect on their bottom line. None.
Right.
But they decided that's not gonna happen.
Right.
Well, I think it's got to apply to the players. They need to have some backbone in these negotiations.
And you want a full 8, even a 5. You're not
ideal.
Doing
it. It should be. Why would you not expect that? McDavid gave them 8.
Right.
Draisaitl gave them 8.
Yeah.
It's all the time. Makar, 8. Everyone else in the league except for guys here.
Yeah.
Explain to me why it's different here.
Why?
It's a fair point.
It is a fair point. It's just everyone is different. And, I personally, all I'm happy about, and maybe this is a small victory, is we're not talking, hopefully, that he's not sure if he wants to, all of that. Like, it's more about getting term and money put together than we're not sure where his camp is at mentally.
Right.
Like, we're thinking, that's
that would be a very different conversation.
So let's take that as a small victory,
sure,
and then if that's the case, I don't know.
That again would speak, in my opinion, that would shift the leverage over to the Maple Leafs side. And I've been clear about this, in my opinion, for weeks. The argument is that Matthews has all the leverage. I don't agree with that if he wants to be a Leaf.
Right.
If he wants to live in Toronto and be a Leaf, then the Leafs hold the leverage because they own that opportunity.
Right.
They can only give that to him. The other 31 markets cannot.
Right.
So there has to be a meeting of the minds and some sort of middle ground. I fully expect him to get 13, 13.5.
Yeah.
Okay, if it's 14, 14.5, though, it better be an 8-year deal.
Yeah, you're looking for term on that.
Don't get your hopes up on that.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
You're right. I somehow feel, and maybe I'm wrong in this, it might be easier for them to dig in on Nylander than dig in on 34.
But is it really digging in if you're making him the highest-paid player in NHL history?
I agree.
Is it really digging in?
It's not.
You just gave him a remarkable contract?
I'm just saying, I'm looking for context. Like, if you're going to get in a pissing match, I'd much rather get in a pissing match with somebody in the next layer of superstardom.
But see, I disagree with that because I think philosophically it's got to start at the top. You got to get – it's got your best player's got to say, okay, like there's a cap in Tampa, and I understand what everyone always says, the state taxes. They don't have to accept that, though. That's always driven me crazy. Like, you can go to Braden Point and say, well, the tax is 9.5, and he could say, awesome, great, I'll take 13.
Yeah.
He doesn't have
to
do
that. That's
what
my league – that's what everyone
else
in the league is
getting. And guess what Florida would have to do? All right, or Tampa, they probably say, all right, 13, and we'll work it out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it doesn't have to be that way.
No, you're right.
Like, but the players decide to accept that, just like Tkachuk did with a completely different team.
Yeah. Your argument is valid. Like, I'm not – I'm just trying to say that there is a win here, and I don't know – the win for you is 8 years, but it
– I think that's
five.
Just – let's say it was 8 years, $13.5 million. Is anyone suggesting Austin Matthews lost that negotiation?
No.
Who on earth would suggest that that's a loss?
It's not.
And so, the thing is, too, you add in this market, I don't know what he's making. It's not my business, but on the gambling ads, on the RBC commercials and stuff. Like,
but
I don't,
the guys that go to the game or any fan of the team would say, are you really going to dig in for that extra one or two per year?
Right,
where everyone's entitled to make whatever they want. We're seeing it all over the sports world.
Yeah.
But how, which side, though? Are you saying Matthews dig in or the Leafs dig in?
No, what I'm saying is your comment there with the 8 years times 13.5, how could that not work in some capacity?
Exactly. For the player.
Oh, yes.
Exactly. And that's on. That's for Tree Living and Shanahan to get to him and his rep and say, come on, man.
Right.
Like, come on.
Yeah,
let's
I
go. Like,
I,
let's
I
go
it.
Here. And if he says no, then maybe the door's open that he doesn't really want to be here. And if he doesn't really want to be here, then that's a completely different conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but
it's
time for these players to prove that being a Leaf
is special to them.
It is, and it's still incredibly lucrative, but it's also about filling out a team. Like, Vegas is a weird example, but they just got wave after wave after wave after wave.
Right.
And, you know, I don't believe they have anyone on that roster making more than 10.
Well, Eichel's at 10.
Eichel's right at 10.
So this is the first time, I believe, in Stanley Cup history that a Cup winner will be making $10 million. It's either Bobrovsky or Eichel.
Right.
Yeah. Right? So that's double digits of players.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and Carey Price was the last guy with an opportunity when Montreal was in the final.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean,
and everyone understands. No, these guys aren't going backwards,
right?
And nor should they. And no one's expecting that,
right?
But I guess that's the most blunt way to put it is, if it were 8 years, 13.5, the idea that he'd be like, that's disrespectful to me, or that's not going to cut it.
No, I get it,
and that doesn't mean he'll accept it.
Yeah.
And listen, I get the impression the Leafs are probably going to say, let's just work it out, and if that's what you need, fine. But that's what they did 5 years ago with all these guys.
Yeah,
Mitch, you missed 2 days of camp. We don't want that. Fine, take it.
Right.
And then a week later, Rantanen signs for way less.
But
and you're
it,
like,
it
what the hell? How did that happen?
A couple
Denver?
Of them, it took them a little bit to catch up to their contract. Now they're, you know, Willie's on a value contract. Mitch is earning his contract. But early on, if you look at it statistically, they weren't living up to their contract. It took them a couple years to do that.
And I understand COVID is factors in, and there's a lot of complexity to it. But we'll see. We'll find out in less than a month.
All this is coming down the pike in the next couple weeks.
Yep, sure is. All right, Steve Phillips will join us on the Alek Manoah news of the day. He has been optioned down to the Florida Complex League, basically a league that the Jays and the other teams in Major League Baseball control.
My buddy sent me a note. It's like a rookie league.
Yeah,
they play out of their complexes.
Yeah, he'll line up against guys you've never heard of before, and he'll work on whatever he's supposed to work on. I don't know if there's cameras in there. We'll find that out from Steve. Like, could you stream it? I doubt
it.
I'm sure Ross and Pete Walker would be streaming it.
Well, yes. I hope Ross Atkins is tracking what's going on with Manoah down there.
What if he's just like, let me know.
Call me when you're ready to come back up.
Yeah, we'll see you in a bit.
All right, Steve coming up, confirmed with deny, still to come as well. We're live at the RBC Canadian Open. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, we are live at the RBC Canadian Open. We'll be here all week. There's a lot of buzz on the grounds about what was going on in that players' meeting with Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA. A lot of smoke, literally smoke in the air, like covering the city of Toronto. It's wild here now.
Weird, man.
Like, there's so many wildfires going on in this country. It's scary stuff, man. We're thinking of people. But there are a lot of different advisories coming out, like, around the city. My daughter's got softball tonight. They've canceled it. They're like, we're just Not going to do it tonight.
We got a note from the kids' school saying they're keeping the kids in tomorrow for recess because of the air quality. So
meanwhile, the 45-year-old golfer is like, I'll be teeing it.
Yeah, 36. I'll be playing 36.
Yeah, no glasses, nothing.
17 beers.
Half a pack of heaters, and he's good.
We'll be fine. All right, here's our TSN baseball analyst, Steve Phillips. Perfect segue. How you doing, Steve?
Yeah, I'm okay, guys. Anything going on up there today?
There's something going on, man. I'll tell you what. You know what's going on right now? A lot of people are Googling what the hell the Florida Complex League is all about, Steve. Can you explain what Alek Manoah is about to take part in?
Yeah, so this is like the lowest level of kids who are going to play in the short seasons. They're waiting for kids to come out of the draft. And, you know, so it's been an extended spring training program for kids. And so the good thing about it is no cameras, no writers. The papers don't report the scores of those games down there. And it really is just basic fundamental baseball to allow him to just go down there and not worry about anything else. They can let him pitch, you know, if he gets three quick outs, they can keep him on the mound and let him throw some more innings. And they can really just, it's a controlled environment, better than even going to AAA or AA right now. There's no scorekeeping really down there. So this is as basic as it gets to be able to allow him to just work on fundamentals, to work on his mechanics, and get away from it all and reset. And I think it's a great move on their part to get him completely out of the limelight and the spotlight, be able to go there and just get back to playing baseball.
Steve, you mentioned the word kids. Are we talking like 18, 19, 20-year-olds? Because Manoah's 25. I mean, are there other guys that are his age, maybe kind of work on some mechanics, coming back from injuries, that type of stuff? Or is it, like I say, developmental?
Well, it's mostly developmental, but there may be some minor leaguers who are rehabbing surgeries and injuries down there. Probably not guys doing what he's doing down there with sort of resetting, you know, as a healthy pitcher, but resetting himself. But what's good about it is that, you know, he can start to build mini success because the level of competition is not going to be great. My guess is that at some point, as he gets himself back on track, they may move him up a level or two or three on the way to get back to the big leagues. But I think it's a really smart idea right now just to get him to where, you know, he can work on things. And even if he made a mistake, nobody's going to torch him down there and put up a bunch of runs, and he can get himself right mechanically, mentally, physically, all of that.
Steve, I'll never admit to paying my dues in the minors because I spent exactly one game down there, and that was it for my career. But when I went down there, I thought to myself, if I don't get it together here, this could be game over as far as the big leagues. Like, it's tough to do, but that thought entered my mind. If you're Ross or Mark, how much is that thought in their heads? Like, how scared are they that this guy might not get it back on track?
Yeah, I don't think they're scared that he won't get back on track. You know, will he ever get back to being the top three for the Cy Young Award? I don't know. I mean, that part, I don't know the answer to it, because I've seen some guys who work it out and get themselves back, but they're never quite as good as they were when they were at their best. I think the bigger question is Manoah's mindset. You know, he's a confident guy, but you saw his face yesterday. I mean, he had hit rock bottom, and, you know, he just looked lost. And he said, you know, he didn't have any time to work on the things to use in the game, the things he had been working on. It just unraveled so quickly for him. And, you know, he had some bad luck. Obviously, the first base hit, not all that hard hit. Then a bunt down the line, and then automatically you're in trouble. And then you're in competitive mode. You're not in, I need to work on my delivery mode. And then it just got away from it. It started going too fast. And so he's as raw as he can be right now. And I think that the rebuild is not just about getting his mechanics right. I think it's about getting his ego right, his psyche right, his confidence back. There's a whole rebuilding process to go through right now. And I'm sure they've mapped it out. They've given it thought. That's why they didn't do a knee-jerk reaction and do it yesterday. They wanted to get all their ducks in a row so that they could look like they had a plan, and that for Manoah, he could be, okay, this is what I can expect. This is what's going to happen. This is what I'm leaving. This is who's meeting me. And he could really have, I think, a thought and a vision about what it's going to be like for him.
With Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB and Jays analyst, I would guess that the nerves coming out of Atkins and Shapiro right now are not necessarily about what's up with Manoah, but about the spotlight that's about to be placed on their feeder system, because that's a big topic of discussion up here, Steve, is it does not appear as if they have anyone even close to being capable of stepping in, like not even close to having someone in the minors that is ready to pounce and come in and legitimately give you, a decent start every fifth day. That would be concerning for me if I were Atkins and Shapiro, because they've been very lucky. Their five starters have been on the mound every fifth day. They haven't had to use a sixth starter. Now the spotlight's on the system and what they have coming. And as of now, Steve, it doesn't look great.
Right. So some of the guys they had that were there as insurance policies haven't performed well. Some of them are hurt. Like Ricky Tiedemann, who was really good in spring, who you thought, boy, could he even make the team in the back end of the rotation? He's hurt. And so, they've had some bad luck and misfortune where guys haven't performed. But here's the thing. They're not going to dwell on that. They're going to just dwell on where can we go to keep finding more pitching depth. You wonder about Zach Plesac, who's designated for assignment from the Cleveland Guardians right now. He's a guy that's had some success at the big league level. Not this year. And when it went to AAA, he didn't. He's had some off-field things that back during COVID when all that took place, he was with Mike Clevenger and they didn't follow the rules and left the hotel and they got dinged a little bit. And, he had a thing in the car once. But, I think that, sometimes, a player like that can get humbled and, things become a lot clearer when you fail. And, some of those things that you kept hearing people say that you ignored because you were entitled and thought you owned the world, all of a sudden you understand them and think, geez, maybe I better start listening to what people say. So I would take a flyer on Zach Plesac. I would. And even if he didn't pitch well immediately, well, Manoah wasn't pitching well, and at least you can add another pitcher to the organization. You might catch lightning in a bottle, and it at least buys you a little bit of time for Manoah to get himself back on track.
Well, it puts the spotlight again on Kevin Gausman tonight, but he's handled it so well. He's been doing this basically all year. Manoah gets blown up. The bullpen basically is used up, and he goes out and gives 110, 115 pitches and throws seven, and I would expect that'll be the case tonight. They're lucky that Gausman's going, Bassett's going, and Berríos has really improved, because if Berríos was struggling like he was last year, this would really be a disaster right now, Steve.
Yeah, for sure. And, it's interesting. The game yesterday, unfortunately, it wasn't more of a blowout, because in order to bring a position player or two into pitch, the deficit has to be eight runs or more. And, it didn't get there.
Right.
So it was 11-4, so they had to keep using pitchers, legitimate pitchers there, where I think they certainly would have preferred to save, two of the six that they ended up having to throw yesterday. Well, they all sort of eight innings, so they really do need Gausman to give them some length today. And remember, the last time he faced the Astros on April 17th, he gave up seven runs and got knocked around. It was one of the bad outings he had for the year. And so, this is kind of a critical start, and he's going to have to flesh out what happened the last time he faced Houston.
How about this news, Jacob deGrom, Tommy John? Like, how does he possibly recover from this, and what is Texas thinking? They're having a great year. They paid him a boatload of money, and he's gone.
Yeah, first of all, the Mets have to be thinking, thank goodness,
right?
This wasn't
right.
Us. And, they weren't willing to go anywhere near the 5 years on this. And I have to tell you that my experience was like, I wouldn't have touched him with a 10-foot pole, because I love it when he's healthy, but he hadn't been healthy, and when the elbow keeps flaring up and you rest it and you come back and it flares up again and you rest it, you've got a ligament problem. I mean, it's not that hard to know, and so I'm not completely shocked by the news of that. The fact that he threw five side sessions and still was feeling pain was a pretty good indicator. Not that he was just dealing with inflammation and soreness, but there was structural damage going on there. That's a big blow to them. Now, fortunately for them, they're 39-20. Their offense is scoring 6.4 runs per game. Nate Eovaldi has pitched like Jacob deGrom. Mm-hmm. They've played some great baseball so far. Marcus Semien leading the way there for them. So, You know, it's bad news for them, but, you know, they are sitting in first place and you know, seem to be dealing without DeGrom just fine so far.
Yeah, no kidding, man. I mean, they haven't really had him anyway, and right. it's been all good in Texas. So, yeah, the Rangers continue to plug along. Jays Astros tonight. We'll see where it goes. Steve, do you want to, before we let you go, why don't you give us your take on a timeline here for Manoah? What if everything works out well for him, when do you think it's reasonable to expect him back with the Blue Jays?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, we're at, what, July 6th, July 7th right now. I think we're looking at, you know, or June 6th, 7th, probably July 1st at the earliest would be my thought on it, mm-hmm. That they need to really get him rebuilt. Then they want to increase the level of competition, and it's got to get to motor memory. And so, you know, I think there's going to be some quiet time, which he's going to need, but I think you're not looking until probably early July for him to be back.
And that's if everything goes well. If there's any setbacks or, you know, situations where you think it's progressing slower, like, are you fine with him maybe staying down there kind of out of sight? I wouldn't say out of mind, but out of sight and just working on his mechanics?
Yeah, I think, look, I don't let the clock or the calendar dictate anything. I let the process, I let the progress really dictate when he's active and when he's ready. And so, and look, he can't have one good out and think, okay, now I'm ready. He needs to be able to repeat it. He needs to be able to recover. He needs to be able to take what he learned one day and show that he's held on to it for the next time around, because things can slip through players' fingers, open fingers so easily. And the level of competition at some point is going to matter. Dominating A-ball kids at some point is not the ultimate goal. And I think he's going to have to progress his way up.
Great catching up with you, Steve. As always, buddy, we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Oh, okay, you got it, guys. Thanks.
Steve Phillips joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's time to Toyota. Visit MapleToyota.com. There's a bit of a Kramer at the dojo here
for
Manoah. I knew you were going to go
He
there.
Goes, dominating kids. I'm like, dominating the dojo. That's all I could think about is Kramer attacking the kids at the dojo.
I hope Manoah's he does.
Like 6'6", 280.
Well, imagine he's talking smack to some, like, 18-year-old, undrafted kid who's just trying to get some hacks
and
in.
Just, like, if he gets his mechanics in order and he's just throwing smoke down there.
He's just got to do whatever anybody, like, there's probably some truth serum from somebody, whether it be Ross or Mark or Pete. And if that's drop a couple, whatever the demands are, just chew on it and do it, and get it over with, and do it quickly.
You don't have another option.
No, right. You got nothing to stand on.
He's not a 10-5 player. He's not out of options, and he doesn't have $100 million in the bank.
I think
he doesn't have any of that.
But this is also, like, I don't think it's a quick fix. They might have a checklist of things that they'd like to see, and if it's getting in better shape physically or lighter or whatever, like, that might be one of them. That takes a little bit of time to work that off your body.
And it's like, everything, Jamie. If they say be at the park at 8 a.m., be there at 6:15.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whatever. So everybody reporting back to somebody else can say, this guy's taking
He's
serious.
All in.
Yeah, which is good.
I mean, absolutely.
You know, and he doesn't have to do it under the spotlight where, you know, it'd be nice for us. We'll have to track him, but if he's untrackable as far as his body of work down there, you just need to hear what they're going to leak and say he's doing really good.
Right.
Yeah, I got so greased in Detroit one time. I was healthy scratched, and I was in the toilet. Okay, I was on the toilet, and I heard Tommy Webster, our assistant coach, go up to Paul Maurice and say, this guy's not even here yet. And I'm not going to yell out, I'm here. Like... So I'm there, and Tommy rats me out. God bless his soul.
Yeah.
All I hear is this guy is supposed to be bag skating in 25 minutes, and he's not even here.
And
I'm on the can around the – and I just said, you know what, go ahead and sewer me. I'm getting skated in half an hour anyway. What do you really care what time I wheel out there on the ice?
I know. If you get bag skated, what is it – what are you taping your stick early?
Then he came to me after practice, and he's like – Tommy Webster, and he's like, you know, you got to give yourself a chance. You got to show up on time. You're not even playing tonight. And I go, Tommy, I was on the can when you were ratting me out to Paul Maurice. And he goes, you were? And I said, yeah. And I said, thanks a lot for doing that. He's like, sorry about that. It was just a disaster.
What kind of facilities are down in Carolina where the coach is eating in the washroom?
Yeah. It was in Detroit.
Oh, it was in Detroit.
Detroit, in the visitor dressing room.
And I would have been the old
up,
Joe, right?
Legs up in the...
I was so mad on that cam.
Talking, yeah, it's legs
like,
up.
This guy see my Air Force Ones. I am toast.
I was so mad on that can. It was outrageous.
Just goes into a Harry Dunn pose. Yeah, and
the way he said it, too, he's like, you wouldn't believe this guy. He's not even here yet. And I just shook my head. Bastard.
Why did you give a courtesy flush or something? And they're like, oh, somebody's in the bathroom.
Noodles, I was just so mad at everything. I'm just like, screw this guy, man. He wants to sewer me. I was here. I was there half an hour before everyone.
It is one of the most awkward parts of society when you're in a washroom. Like, if you're there by yourself and someone comes in.
Yeah.
And, like, you give, like, a courtesy cough. Like, I'm in here. Like, just let people know. Because I've seen some stuff at our place of business. I walked in. This would have been 2 months ago. Some guy was on the speakerphone talking to his wife or something. And absolutely no remorse. He could not have cared less. He was talking about their weekend plans, loud, obnoxious speakerphone.
That's tough.
And I'm like, dude, what are you? It's 5:30 on a Wednesday at a place of business.
And your urinal flushes because of the sensor.
Right. Exactly. It's like, come on.
I heard some weird noises at Channel 9 court, and I made a comment. I said, chew your food, guy. And the guy knew who I was. He recognized I'm not going to sewer him and say his name.
Okay. Yeah. You don't just keep that to yourself. Keep that to yourself.
You can't. Yeah, that's
to a random. To a random, it's not recommended.
Yeah, no. It's all good. All right, this is a Dear Hazy B segment midweek. We're trying to help people here.
Yeah, it's not good.
All right, Bob Weeks will join us around the table. Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA, has come out. He spoke to the players. He's speaking with the media this hour. Weeks, he'll join us. We'll get you more of an update on the news of the day in the PGA Tours world. Also, RBC Canadian Open, it's go time. The Pro-Am's tomorrow. Right, I may or may not have found out who I'm playing with tomorrow, and it's going to be electric out there at Oakdale. And we got confirmed with an eye still to come. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, he's walking around the city of Toronto somewhere. He may be hiding at this point because the meeting he had with the players at 4 p.m., based on reports that are starting to come out, it didn't go over so well. Jay was not received very well, and it got to a point where there are reports, someone in the room offered up the idea of new leadership, basically get Monahan out.
And there was the boys like that.
A standing ovation.
Really?
That is when you know you could be in one. If you're sitting up there and you're trying to explain your blueprint for the future and guys are like, actually, we prefer you don't exist here anymore.
But
and
he's no dummy. He probably said, you're going to broker this deal. I'm not going anywhere. So build that in there somehow.
Yes. Like, this did not happen overnight, and he was well aware of the icy reception that was coming. He's got to have some sort of a power play if you're Monahan. Yeah. But what I would suggest is Greg Norman probably thought the same thing a year ago. I'm the man now. I'm not sure Norman's still kicking around as of today, now, let alone into the future. So
Norman made a fortune for this whole scenario.
That is
not
the belief.
Right.
Yes.
Monahan, what do you think his clip is financially?
I don't think you can get like a side hustle on this, though, as the commissioner of the PGA Tour. Like, you can't go to the Saudis and say,
get a brokering, you know,
I don't think so, because
percentage of it?
Because I think they just came together over legalese and over an understanding that maybe Liv was never going to die off, so they basically just keeled over and said, let's make it work.
The one comment that's tough for Monahan is last year he was speaking to Jim Nantz at the Canadian Open about people, 9/11, families of the people, and he brought that to Monahan's attention, and he had this big shot kind of answer about being proud to be a PGA Tour member or something to that effect, and he's going to have to chew that one for a while.
A lot of people were playing the moral high ground. They were on their high horse about it, and I understand why you would be, for sure. You're entitled to that opinion. But Monahan, he put it on thick a year ago. And you're right.
Did.
A year later, he's like, Nah, we're joining forces.
And a lot of his top players, he put them out there
to fight that fight.
Exactly.
Well, this is what's coming. Like this public investment firm, you know, the Saudis are pumping a lot of money. Karim Benzema, yeah, who's a French international, one of the more famous soccer players around the world, he's going there for like 3 years, $600 million plus. They've already got Ronaldo. By all accounts, they're in on Messi. They're in on Modric. It's coming.
Right.
Like they have billions and billions and billions of dollars, and the Saudis want to get in the sports world, and they're doing it with golf. They're going to do it with soccer. It may not be long before there's another big league in North America that says, all right, you know, we'll take the money too in some capacity.
What if Gary Bettman put his hand up and said, put some hockey in Saudi?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you could put a league there necessarily.
No, but
if they're going to invest, if they want to own a team in some capacity, let's say expansion happens again. Saudis roll in and say, we'll give you $2 billion for that team. Everyone else will pay $1 billion. Guess what's going to happen?
They're getting a team.
Chances are they're going to get a team. So, you know, all of this is kind of on the table.
That's
all right,
true.
Bob Weeks will join us, confirm or deny, into the next hour. We're live at the RBC Canadian Open. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050, soon to be up on TSN 2.
Introducing TSN Plus.
What a game changer.
Canada's new home for PGA Tour Live.
Are you kidding me?
Exclusive data-enhanced feeds, plus more goals, dunks, aces, and speed. Visit tsn.ca/TSN Plus to learn more.